Okay, we're beginning here on the last word of Chav Chet Amod Bet, Tanu Rabbanan. Vivatlim Tamu Torah, Otsata Meit, Olachnasat Kala. One has to interrupt their Torah learning in order to perform these two mitzvot. We already discussed this back on Daf Gimel Amod Bet, that Kavod HaTorah takes precedence over Limud HaTorah, and therefore in this instance there is an obligation on the individual to take a break, interrupt their Torah learning in order to accompany the Meit, or to be Machnis the Kala, the Chupata. Now those two mitzvot we know are important mitzvot, because as we say in the Braita that we say every morning when we say Birkat HaTorah, El Devarim She Adam Ochel Perotem Olam Hazeh V'Keren Kayem Adam Haba, included in that list is the Leviat HaMeit Olachnasat Kala. Now Rashi over here notes that the Achnasat Kala over here is Levotam Yibet Aviyah Lebet Chupata. It's not necessarily to partake or participate in the wedding itself. It is in the dancing of the woman from her father's house to the Chupa, to the Makom HaChupa, which is the public part of the wedding, meaning that the wedding will be a meal amongst the family and the close friends and the dancing and so on and so forth. But the part of accompanying the kala, which is something that involves the entire city, that is something that a person needs to join or be a participant in. And the same we'll see with regards to what Balei HaTosafot say and also the Shulchan Aruch Paskins. The same is true with the Vayat HaMeit or Atzat HaMeit, that it's the part of accompanying the mate to the Kvurah. It's not the actual Kvurah and not the preparations beforehand, but the actual Kvurah itself. Amru Alav of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yilai, Shem Evatel Tamu Torah, Atzat HaMeit Ulachnasat Kala. Now we have a story about Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yilai, who is Stam Rabbi Yehuda in Shas. So we know it's a big Talmud Chochom, and he would interrupt his Talmud Torah in order to perform these two mitzvot. But now there's a qualification. If the person doesn't have sufficient accompaniment, or is not being properly taken care of. If the person has everything they need, or the accompaniment is sufficient, then one does not interrupt their Torah learning. Well, then you have to tell us, what is that threshold to know whether you should interrupt your Torah learning or not? So, Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Inia Mishmei Durav, Tresar Alfei Gavre, 12,000 individuals, Vishita Alfei Shipure, and 6,000 individuals blowing the shofar. Vamri La, Tresar Alfei Gavre, some say that it's 12,000 individuals, Uminaihu Shita Alfei Shipure, and amongst them, there are 6,000 that are blowing the shofar. So it's a question if it's 18,000 or 12,000. The Marsha says as the significance of the number 12,000 were the number of troops that they took to go to battle with Midian in the Midbar, and they were successful at that battle. So that's considered to be an accompaniment upon which the bracha or the shechina is shora, and therefore it's a proper amount of individuals to go. And the same is true with regards to the blowing of the shofar, similar to the blowing of the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, which is to push away the satan or confuse the satan. So it's over here, the blowing of the shofar, or having these individuals who blow the shofar, is proper in order to take away from the Satan's ability to be mikatreg over the death of an individual, which is usually a time of din, a time of reckoning, and therefore we blow the shofar in the same way we would blow it on Rosh Hashanah, b'yom hadin. So now that would be the proper accompaniment. So now the Gemara says, ulamar, kagon dechaitse gavre me'avula ad sichra. If there is a line of people, or the accompaniment stretches from avula, which is the shar, the gate of the city, Ad Sichra, Rashi says, is until the Beit HaKvarot, to the place where they give the Hespedim. So if there is a line of people that goes from the exiting of the city, the Shar of the city, all the way to the Beit HaKvarot, then that's already a sufficient number of people. The word Sachra or Sichra usually means to dam up or to cover up, and that's what it means here. It means maybe the grave side where they cover up the mate or where they bury the mate. So that's the Avula from the Shar, Ad HaSichra, until the grave. Rav Sheshet Amar, Ki Nitinata. Rav Sheshet said, it's like the giving of the Torah. Kach Nitilata. So too the taking of the Torah. Ma Nitinata B'Shishim Ribo. Just like the giving of the Torah was given with 600,000 people present. That was Bnei Yisrael's count at that time. Af Nitilata B'Samach Ribo. So too when the life of a Talmud Chacham is taken, then 600,000 is the appropriate number. Now it could have been that it was connected to the fact that at Har Sinai, those that stood at Har Sinai, passed away from the exposure to a Kodesh Baruch Hu and had to be brought back to life each time. Therefore, it's related to the passing of an individual. But based on the ways the Gemara qualifies it now, it's clear that it's connected to the fact that the person we're speaking about here is a Talmud Chacham. Because Hani Mile, the Mandakari Vitani. That's true of someone who learned Torah and learned Mishnah. About the man, the Matne, Leitle Shiura. But someone who learned Gemara or was teaching others Torah, then there's no limit, that these are not relevant. Balei HaTosafot over here point out that now you have actually three categories, because you have a category of Kari Vitani, which are the limitations that they're arguing about over here, whether it should be 12,000 from the gate of the city to the graveside, or 600,000 individuals. That's for someone who learned Torah, learned Mishnah, maybe even learned Gemara, but did not teach. Whereas for someone who teaches, then there is no limit. But that also means that if it's someone who was not Kari Vitani, someone who is not a Talmud Chacham, just a regular individual who did not have that learning of Torah under their belt, then they would not have this requirement. That's what the Baal Tosafot over here say, Mimela Shmeinan to the Mandalo Kari Vitani, Itle Shiura, that there is a shiur for that. Vein Mabatlim Talmud Torah Bishvilo. And we do not interrupt Torah learning for him. Only to make sure that you have sufficient number of individuals to deal with the particular mate. Again, we'll explain this in one second. We're going to read the halacha and the Shulchan Aruch to summarize everything that we've seen, plus what we saw earlier in the Masechta. But with regards to Mivatlim Torah, the Wotzata mate, question of whether that's an obligation. That's what the Shach says. It's a chiyuv. It's an obligation on the individual to do such. Whereas the Rosh seems to indicate that it's something of an option, meaning that it's mutar. It's not that you have to interrupt, but you are allowed to interrupt your Talmud Torah in order to do this, because there is a value in kavod mate, especially when it's a mate that's a Talmud Chacham, and therefore there's a value that allows you or gives you permission to interrupt your Torah learning. The only time it's an obligation, he claims, is when it's a mate mitzvah. And that's based on the Gemara back on Gimel Amud Bet, where the Gemara speaks about mate mitzvah. The Tosafot commented back there on Gimel Amud Bet in Tosafot mate mitzvah, lav davka mate mitzvah. Tosafot disagrees and says that it's not only about a mate mitzvah, v'adin l'chol meitim shvolam. It's true of any mate. Mivatlim Talmud Torah lotziam. You interrupt Talmud Torah in order to accompany them. Ela aidi denaka b'samuch. Gabi l'chotu mate mitzvah. Hakanami naka Talmud Torah mate mitzvah. It's because of the lima that they're going to learn later on that involves mate mitzvah. So the Gemara consistently used mate mitzvah, but it's true of any mate. And therefore the Tosafot seems to imply that this is an obligation not just for a mate mitzvah, but even for any mate in terms of accompaniment. And that's the way that the Shulchan Aruch codifies this, the halacha. This is in Shulchan Aruch, Yoredeya, Hilchot Aveilut, Simon Shin Samach Aleph, Sif Aleph. And that is Mivatlim Talmud Torah L'Utzat HaMate. One has to interrupt Talmud Torah for the taking out of a mate. L'man D'matni L'Acherim. That's for someone who taught others, like our Gemara says. And Ein Lo Shiur. There's no limit to how many people have to accompany or be a part of that. Even if there are many thousand people accompanying him, you still have to interrupt your Torah learning. That was where we saw the argument here. Someone who learned Torah and Mishnah. Sounds like he didn't learn Gemara or he didn't teach others. Didn't teach other students. If he already has 600,000, then you don't have to be mevatel for him. So it seems to me that that's probably almost every funeral out there, because almost never reached that threshold of 600,000. But there he says, first of all, tzarich lehitzbatel. One must interrupt their Torah learning for that individual. Leman delo kari vitani, like the Baal Tosafot, he says over here, someone who didn't learn Torah, kevin sheyesh lo mishi tasekimo, ein tzarich lehitzbatel bishvilo. Like Tosafot says, if someone is dealing with him, then it's enough. Vuhu yisheyesh ha-masara. That's as long as there's a minion that's dealing with them. They have somebody to deal with the mate, deal with the tara, deal with the kvura, and they have a minion to say Kaddish by the graveside. That's enough, and then you don't have to interrupt your Torah learning. The Ramah makes an interesting gloss over here, which is Yeshomim, Dachshav min astam mevatlim. Today we don't ask questions whether a person learned or didn't learn, and in general, or the default scenario is that we are mevatel, shein lecha achad miYisrael, because you don't have anybody in Klal Yisrael, that didn't at least learn Torah and some Mishnah, that has some Torah learning under their belt, and not complete the Amei Aretz. And therefore the Ramah believes that one has to interrupt Talmud Torah for anybody who is getting buried at this point in time, at least to accompany them. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch qualifies later on, and that's what Tosafot says over here. We mentioned that before. In Sif Bet it says, Bamed varim amurim shematlim Talmud Torah lo voto b'shat ha'utzato. That's only when you're accompanying them. If they're just waiting to bury them, then you don't have to be mevatel Talmud Torah for that. Meaning that the key element of where you need to be engaged with the mate is in the accompaniment of the mate. Taking the mate from the city, from the house to the burial place. The tara and those that take care of the mate are limited in number. And those that do the actual burial are also can be limited in number. The main issue is the accompaniment to melaveh, to accompany the mate going out to the graveside. And that's where you have to be mevatel Talmud Torah. And the Shulchan Aruch ends off with the Tinokot Shvet Rabban Eim Mevatlin Klal. the children from the yeshiva don't stop learning no matter what. That sounds like that's a generic statement that we don't stop them from learning, even for tzatamet, that it's not appropriate. LMK, maybe it's a gadol ador or their own Rebbe, then maybe there's a possibility that you mevatel them, but it seems to be, based on Yerushalmi, that this is something that we do not do. And then in Sif Bet, he continues, if there are chevrot kedishas in the city that handle a mate, and they take turns, or there's some sort of rotation, then in that rotation, whoever is in the rotation comes and takes care of the mate, and then everybody else is released and can go learn Torah and do whatever melacha that they have to do. But at the shat hotza'ah, at the time that you're actually taking the mate out, Tosafot says that over here as well, that this dispensation to ignore the havayata mate when he didn't learn or when there's a sufficient number, that's only true when you're talking about Talmud Torah, which takes precedence. But that's not true with regular working individuals. They have to be mevatel from their work, afilo ilokari vitani. Even if the individual didn't learn anything, these distinctions are only relevant when we're talking about Talmud Torah, about learning Torah. But shamalachot, when it comes to any other work, one has to interrupt their work in order to accompany the mate, no matter what the status of the mate is. And if there are not chaburot in the city that take turns taking care of this stuff, then everybody has to stop and deal with the mate. But if there are people who are specifically assigned to do it, then the others can continue working, with the exception of the hotzata mate, where everybody is obligated as a baal malacha to do that. And with Talmud Torah, we saw the different qualifications of when and if you have to be mevatel Talmud Torah to do hotzata tamate. And now we're continuing the Gemara. Tanya, Rabbi Shimba Yochai Omer, Bore Kama Chavivin Yisrael Fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. See how beloved Klal Yisrael are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shebechol Makom Shegalu Shechina Imahem. Everywhere they went into exile, God accompanied them in that exile. Galu LeMitzrayim, they ended up in exile in Mitzrayim, Shechina Imahem. God accompanied them there, Shenemar, because when the Isha Lukim appears to Elia Kohen to chastise him for the improper behavior of his children, then it says, Vayavo Isha Lukim el Eli v'yomer lav, Komar Hashem, Haniglo, Nigleiti el Beit Avicha b'yotam b'mitzrayim the Beit Paro. Now, it's a rhetorical question, but the rhetorical question is really a statement of fact, which is that I did appear to your father's household when they were in Mitzrayim, to Beit Paro, to take them out of Mitzrayim, and b'chor oto mikol shiftei Yisrael li l'kohen lalot al mizbechi laktir k'tor l'asei teifo d'fanai etne l'beit avicha et kol ishei b'inei Yisrael. Says, I chose you from amongst all the tribes to be the one that carries the priesthood of Klal Yisrael. Hashem is saying that I came to take care of B'nai Yisrael while they were in Mitzrayim. Obviously that was Derech Moshe Rabbeinu and Aron HaKohen. And it says, haniglo nigleiti, the Marsha suggests over here, it's because of the duplicate Lashon. And it's not simply that Hashem appeared to them there, but that he was gole, he was with them, indicates that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mitzta'er over the galut, that he has pain over B'nai Yisrael being found in the galut. And that's like the Gemara in the beginning of Brachot and Daf Dalet, which says HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always in pain over the Churban HaBayit, and therefore he's ke'yachol, experiencing the difficulty along with B'nai Yisrael. Galut of Bavel, after the Churban HaBayit Rishon, they were also sent into exile in Bavel, Shechina Imahem. There too, the Shechina was with them, because as it says in Yeshayahu, Komar Hashem Goalchem Kadosh Yisrael. This is what God, the Redeemer, says to Yisrael, Lamanchem Shilachti Bavela, I sent for you in Bavel, Varati Barichim Kulam, I took everybody in chains, V'kazdim Vaniot Rinatam, and the Babylonians were in their ships of song. Rashi over here brings that there are two possible ways to read the Pasuk. It could be that the Pasuk is describing B'nai Yisrael's exile into Bavel, or it could be describing Bavel's exile by the Medians or the Persians later on, where they're going to be sent out. And that's how the Gemara is reading it over here, which is that, Komar Hashem Goalchem, God the Redeemer says to you, Kedosh Yisrael, Manchem Shilachti Bavela, I sent to Bavel, or I went into Bavel, Baradzi Brichim Kulam, and I took the Babylonians out in chains, meaning that they were exiled by the Koresh and by the Persian Media Empire, because Dim Vaniot Rinatam, and in those same ships that they were singing away, they were now shipped away into exile, and that's what brought the redemption for B'nai Yisrael in Bavel. But you see again that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Shilachti Bavela, that I went into Bavel and I was there with you to make sure that you came back out. And so too in the future, when they will be redeemed, the Shekhinah will be with them. So here they quote the pasuk that's found in Parshat Nitzavim, which says that Vashavta ad Hashem Elokecha v'shamata bekolo. After all this befalls you, you're going to return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and listen to Him. Hashem will bring back your remnant and have mercy on you. And He will bring back and ingather you from all the nations that He dispersed you to. Now the pasuk, as it points out here, it doesn't say Beishiv, Hashem will bring back et shvutcha, your remnant, Vo Mermar Ela Vishav, that He will come back. Mlameid Shakarsh Bokhu Shavi Mahem Bibena Galiot. It's as if Akarsh Bokhu is returning along with Bnei Yisrael from the Galut. And now it's true here that it's only speaking at the moment of the Geula, which is at the moment of the Geula, Hashem will be there and bring them back. But the fact that it indicates that Hashem is coming back at the Geula with Bnei Yisrael already shows that He was there with them during the Galut. And the idea being that He still has Hashkocha over Bnei Yisrael, it might be mitigated in some way, it might be of a lesser form, but it means that Kadosh Baruch Hu is still connected to Klal Yisrael in the Galut and has not forsaken them just because they've been kicked out of the land, where the Hashkocha Hashem is clearly al Bnei Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. Even when they go into Galut, the Shekhinah is around with them and gives us hope that we always will be redeemed and come back to the Geula and back to Eretz Yisrael. So Mara asks an interesting question, B'Bavel Heicha. In Bavel, in this Babylonian exile, where is he found? Amar Abaye b'Beit Nishta de Hutzal. He was found in the shul in Hutzal. U'B'Beit Nishta de Shaf V'Yotiv b'Narada. And the other place was the shul of Shaf V'Yotiv that's found in Narada. Rashi over here says Shaf V'Yotiv U'B'na Yochunya V'Siyato Me'Avanim V'Afar Sheviu Mehem B'Galutan. This was a shul that was built by the exile of Yochunya, where they brought stones and earth with them from Eretz Yisrael when they were put into Galut. As Rashi explains in Tehillim, Kiratsu, that they love Avadecha et Avanah bet Afra. They had a love affair with the stones and with the earth of Eretz Yisrael, and that is what brought Chain. That's what brought them grace before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it was from the Holy Land, and that's what gave them the ability to build it and have the Shekhinah be Shorah there. Or the way that the Ebenezer says it is, Ki Ratzu, is Kol Ratzon Avadecha. The only thing they wanted, or what they desired so badly, was to see its stone and its earth, Yechoneneinu. And that love, or that desire to go back, will allow them to build something that will result in the Hashrat HaShekhinah. Now, the Pashtut HaPasuk is that it's going to be in Eretz Yisrael, but Rashi is taking the Pasuk and saying, well, there's at least an interim consolation that when they built this from the product of Eretz Yisrael, that it brought the Shekhinah with them. Now, Rabbi Kiv Eger points you to the Ramban in the Milchomot at the end of Ketubot, who says that Narda was the Iker part of Bavel. Proof to that is the fact that the Shekhinah was Shorah in Narda, so that made it the central city or the central part of Bavel because of that reason. The Gaonim translates Shaf V'Yotiv, as Shaf means destroyed, V'Yotiv means to rebuild or to settle down. And that is that this was dismantled from Yerushalayim and then rebuilt when they reached Bavel. And some of the Goanim even suggest that they were stones or earth that was taken from the Mikdash itself. And the Oroch claims that they took it out of the destruction or the stones that had fallen from the Mikdash and brought it there. Oh, that's a little difficult to reconcile with what Rashi is saying over here, which is that it was in the time of Galut Yechoniah, which is 11 years before the Churban HaBayit in the time of Tzidkiyahu, and they came much earlier, so it would seem to be that either they had to have taken apart or dismantled part of the Mikdash, or more likely they just brought raw materials from Eretz Yisrael with which they rebuilt the Beit Knesset, whether that's literally or figuratively, and then that Beit Knesset became the Makom where the Shekhinah was Shorah. Lo tema hocha vehocha, and don't suggest, based on what Abayi said now, that the Shekhinah Shorah in the Shul and Hutzal, as well as in the Beit Knesset in Neharda, Ella, it's a zimnim hacha, a zimnim hacha. Sometimes he's there, sometimes he's there, but they're never in two places at once. It's a big statement about the Hashrat HaShekhinah. The Shekhinah is only present in one location at a time. And that might be interesting in explaining the tension between Yosef and Yaakov, that we see that Yosef's ascendancy takes place when Yaakov is having difficulties, and then once the Shekhinah returns to Yaakov, it seems to have left Yosef, which means that the Shekhinah leaves Yaakov at the time that Yosef is sold down to Mitzrayim, and at that point, the Shekhinah is with Yosef. Because of that, all the successes that he had before are not happening now for him, obviously because he's in a state of mourning, that also takes away the ability to have the Ashrat HaShekhinah. Yosef, who has the Shekhinah with him, then becomes successful and rises into the being the viceroy of Egypt. And then when Yaakov gets the great news that Yosef is alive and he's then able to uplift his spirits, all the Rishonim point out that the Shekhinah came back to him at that point. At that point, it seems to be that the Shekhinah left Yosef, and Yosef's peaked in terms of his Hashrat HaShekhinah and successes, and the remainder of the story really focuses on Yaakov. That might be related to this Gemara over here, that the Shekhinah is only found at one place at one time. Amar Abaye Teitali. So like we saw in the previous Dapim, that they were Amoraim and Tanaim, that said that this is something that I did that should be given credit for, because I went out of my way to do something special. So Abaye says the same thing. When I was within a Parsa's distance for a meal of these shuls where the Shekhinah was Shorah, I learned Metzlina Hatam. I used to go and daven there. I would take a detour when I got close enough in order to daven there so that I would be able to experience the place where the Shekhinah was resident. Avod Shmuel v'Levi. So Avod Shmuel was in Bavel, and Levi was in Eretz Yisrael. He was a, as we saw earlier in the Masechta, he was a Talmid Mufak of Rabbi, and he learned before Rabbi and got injured in front of Rabbi, as we saw before. He had some altercation with the authorities in Eretz Yisrael and had to run away to Bavel. When he went into Bavel, he befriended Avod Shmuel, and they became very close compatriots. So Aviyatve B'Knishta de Shafi Yavdi B'Nardo. They were sitting together in the shul. Acha Shechina, God's presence came. Shamu Kol Riksha, they heard a commotion because of the Shechina was present. Kamu V'Nafku, they ran out because they were scared of the presence of the Shechina, or maybe out of respect for the presence of the Shechina, they went out. Rav Sheshet, Hayyotiv V'Bei K'nishta D'Shafiyotiv. Rav Sheshet, who as Rashi points out was blind, was sitting in the shul, Shafiyotiv in Narda. Atya Shechina, once again, the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu manifests itself. V'lo Nafak, and he didn't go out, he didn't leave. Now, it seems to me that's because he was blind that he did not go out. Now, in terms of sensing the presence of the Shekhinah, we saw before that Levi and Avod Shmuel didn't see the Shekhinah. They sensed it from the commotion. And it may be very true that Rav Sheshet also sensed it, but he couldn't do anything about it because he was blind, and therefore he wasn't able to remove himself. So, Atu Malachei Asharet, V'kamuvatulei, the holy angels came and started to scaring him or trying to frighten him to leave, as if he was doing something wrong, like he didn't move, he didn't get up out of respect for the Shekhinah that was present. Amar lafanav ribono shel olam. So Rabbi Sheshet looks up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Aluv, Shenu Aluv, min nidche. Someone who is oppressed or someone who is wretched, meaning that they are suffering from a difficulty, and someone who doesn't have that difficulty, min nidche mipnei mi. Who moves because of whom? He's suggesting that because he was someone who was incapacitated in some way because of his blindness, that he should not be the one that's compelled to have to move. And that either HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes room for him, or the Malachi Asherah back off. Amar lehu shavku. Therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Malachim, leave him alone. He's right. And that out of that respect for Rav Sheshet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu called off the Malachim from booting him out of the shul, even though the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was felt there. But these stories are there to reinforce this idea that there was a presence of the Shekhinah in Bavel, and it was found in the shuls in Bavel. It's only interesting because these stories take place after the Geula from Bavel. After that Pasuk in Yeshayah already indicates that Hashem was in Bavel and brought them back, the Gemara still sees the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu found in Bavel post the Churban Bayit HaSheni, and not that it went out to the exile in Rome or any other place where the Jews were sent. So now the Gemara quotes the Pasuk from Yechezkel, which gives consolation to the people that were going into Galut. It says, with regards to their Galut, that I've distanced them in the nations, and I dispersed them in the lands, and I will be for them a small holy sanctuary in the lands that they came to. And then it says afterwards, I'll bring them back from those places that I dispersed them. But what is this Mikdash Ma'at? These are the shuls and the yeshivot that are found in Bavel. Rabbi Elazar Amar, Ze Beit Rabbeinu Shebavel. Elazar says, this is the house of our Rebbe, the Great One. Rabbeinu is a reference to Rav in Bavel. It's Rav's Beit Midrash in Bavel, which is interesting because Rabbi Elazar is an Amora in Eretz Yisrael, and he's saying that the Shechina is found, or that the Mikdash Ma'at is a reference to Rav's Beit Midrash in Bavel. Darash Rava, Maidichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk that's found in the beginning of Tehillim, Perek Tzadi, that we say every Shabbat, Tfilat Moshe Ish Elokim, Hashem Ma'on Ata, Haita Lanu Bedor Vador. Hashem, you were a abode, a refuge for us from generation to generation. So what is this Ma'on, this abode or refuge that we have? Elu Batei Knesiot, Ubatei Midrashot. Once again, it's a reference to the shuls and the yeshivot. So Amar Abaye, Abaye says, Miresh, Abagarisna Bebeita, Umaslina Bebei Knishta. I used to learn at home, and then I would go and daven in the shul. Came into Shemayel Ahad Akamar David. After I heard this pasuk that David said, Hashem Ha'afti Ma'on Beitecha, which is found in Tehillim Chavav, it's the pasuk that we quote in Matovu that we say every morning, Hashem Ha'afti Ma'on Beitecha. I loved your abode, your refuge, your house, Mokom Mishkan Kvodecha, the place where your Shechina is found. So Havagiris Nabi Beit Knishta. From there I said, oh, now I should go and learn in the shul. Now what's interesting about this, and the Mashar points out already, is that all he does is quote a pasuk. Quoting a pasuk in Tehillim, that's not something that Abaye wasn't aware of beforehand. The Rashba just simply says that he paid more attention or paid more heed to this, and when he did that, this is what came out to him, but the Mashar explains. So what was new to Abaye was the explanation that was given by Rava to Ma'on in Tehillim Tzadi. That once he interpreted Ma'on Beitecha to be the shul and not just the Beit HaMikdash, so once he had this new definition of Ma'on, then he could reinterpret the pasuk that's found in Tehillim Chavav. He says, Ma'on is a reference to the shul, to the Beit Knesset, then Hashem Ahavti Ma'on Beitecha was beloved to me, the abode or the refuge where you are found, that's Makom Mishkan Kvodecha, then that must be the appropriate place to go learn. So I should not only daven in the shul, but I also should learn in the shul, because that's the place where the Shechina is found. That's the place where the abode of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Now, this is interesting, because as Rabbi Akiva Eger points out, that the Gemara in Brachot, on Daf Chet Amud Aleph, has the same story with Abaye, and it says just the opposite. Ve'amar Abaye, Mireisha v'garisna begobeta, I used to learn in my house, umatzlina bebei knishta, and then I would daven in shul. Kevin Shamana Dahad Amar Rabbi Chir Ba'abi, Mishmeid Ula, after I heard this memra from Ula, Miyom Shcharab Beit HaMikdash, Ein Lo LaKadosh Baruch Hu Balamo, El Arba Mot Shel HaChav Bovad, that once the Churban HaBayit took place, the only thing left in Hashem's world is Halacha, the Limud HaTorah, Lova Matzlina Elche DeGarisna, therefore I would only daven where I learnt. So it's the opposite way around. He's saying over there, I would not daven in the shul anymore, I would daven where I learnt, in the Beit Midrash, or in my house. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, this is quoted here in Daf Chet, and then later on in Masechta as well. Avgal davalu tleisai beit knishta b'Tveria, even though there were 13 shuls in Tveria, l'matzol ben amude, they'd only daven between the pillars, meaning in the Beit Midrash, Eichud Avagarsi, where they learned Torah. So you see there that Abaye did the opposite. He moved from the shul to daven in the place where he learned. And over here in our Gemara, he's indicating that he moved from the place that he learned to go daven in the shul. So if you look here in the notes on the side, he says that the Yalkut and Tehillim, as the Gir says, Rova, and that's the Gir Sinein Yaakov, so that would actually solve the problem, because there it's Abaye, here it's Rova, and they would have come to opposite conclusions. But the other Rishonim think that both of them are statements by Abaye, and that they need to be reconciled. Marsha is Michalik, like the Torah says, in Or HaChaim Siman Sadeh, he says, V'hani Mile Lamonam, going to shul and davening with the minyan in shul is for the regular people. One who has a fixed Beit Midrash, Shlomed Bo, and he learns there all the time, Mitzvah Leitpalel Bo. There's a mitzvah to daven there, Afilu Ein Lo Asara, even without a minion. And then he quotes the Gemara in Brachot that we just noted. But then he qualifies that and says, Mio Adonai Avi, the Rosh, said, Katab B'tshuvat Shela, V'zeh Lashono, Tov Leitpalel Metzibur Basara, better to daven with a minion, Kizman Tfilah Lachud, Vizman Torah Lachud. In our day, davening is separate from learning Torah. And we don't have this classification that Torah is our profession. We are not so steeped in Torah that we are unable to daven, like is mentioned in the Gemara in Daf Yud in Shabbat with regards to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai v'chaverav. We're mevatel for other things, so we can certainly mevatel Torah during the davening time of Shalem Ota B'Shot HaCherot, and make it up for it in other times. And there where we have both Torah and Tefillah, The problem also is that if he doesn't daven with the tzibur, other people are going to learn from him. They won't worry about davening in a shul. Then all the shuls will be empty. So therefore, that's maybe the chiluk that is noted here by the Torah. That might explain that the Gemara here in Megillah, where Abayi says that you should always daven in the shul, that's when you don't have a midrash kavua, where you don't have a place that you learn all the time, or is a fixed location for learning, or is a beit midrash kavua. That's when you should daven in the shul and not in the place that you learned. On the other hand, if you have a midrash kavua where you always learn, then you one should favor that over the shul, and that's the Gemara in Brachot. Despite that distinction that's drawn, he quotes from his father, the Rosh, the Torah, and says that today doesn't really apply, and that everybody should go to shul and daven with the minyan in shul. So Tanya, Rabbi Lazar HaKapar, Omer, Atidim Bati Knesiot, Ubati Midrashot Shebavel, Shikavu Be'eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Elazar ben HaKapar says that all the shuls and yeshivot that are found in Chutzlarts, in Bavel, in the end they will be brought to Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar, because it says the pasuk, ki k'tavor beharim, uke Carmel bayam yavo, that just like Tavor, tallest amongst the mountains, and Carmel descends into the sea. Now the context of the pasuk is found in Yirmiyahu Memvav, pasuk yudchet, it's actually the Haftorah for Parshat Bo, and it's Hashem taking a shvuah, that just like Tavor is one of the highest amongst the mountains, and Carmel descends into the sea, so too I'm going to bring Bavel to Mitzrayim, and they're going to put Mitzrayim into Galut. So Hashem says, just like these are fixtures, so too Mitzrayim will not be able to escape the onslaught of the Babylonians when they come to attack Mitzrayim. But then we have a Gadic interpretation about these mountains. Alo Dvarim Kal V'Chomer, isn't it a logical extension? Matavor Carmel. They only came for a short period of time to greet a Kadosh Baruch Hu at Sinai, and so he's interpreting the pasuk out of context, saying, where are they coming to? They're coming to Har Sinai to see or to witness the giving of the Torah. Nevertheless, Nikvaim Beretz Yisrael, even though they came to Har Sinai to see or witness the giving of the Torah, they were planted or fixtures in Eretz Yisrael. Places where they learn and they disseminate Torah, then certainly so they should be brought to Eretz Yisrael. It's a little bit difficult because Tavor and Carmel started out in Eretz Yisrael, then they went to witness the giving of the Torah, and then they went back. That's not necessarily true of the Bate Knesiot and Bate Midrashot that were built from the outset there, although this might be the idea that the Bate Knesiot and Bate Midrashot are really a continuation or an extension of what took place in Mikdash, and that's why they're called Mikdash Me'at, and so they really belonged or were from Eretz Yisrael and draw their power from Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they will be returned in the end to Eretz Yisrael. This what somewhat negates the Gemara that we saw in yesterday's daf with regards to making conditions on Bate Knesiot and Bate Midrashot Shebavel in order that they don't have Kedushah because they're not permanent fixtures. According to this view, they are permanent fixtures because they're eventually going to be lifted and brought to Eretz Yisrael. And that would seem to go against or mitigate that which we saw yesterday about the Bate Knesiot Shebavel were built out tonight, that they will eventually lose their Kedushah because they will be left behind when everybody goes to Eretz Yisrael. Tarish Bar Parkara, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk in Tehillim that says, Lama teratzdun harim gabnunim? Why are you prancing around, dancing around, you majestic mountains? Yatzta batko v'amra lahem, Lama tertzu din im Sinai? Why are you starting up with Har Sinai? Kulchem balimumim atem. You are all blemished. Etzel Sinai in comparison to Sinai. This seemingly is based on the Midrash that all the mountains were trying to boast and explain why they were the ones that were the highest or the best for the Torah to be given on. And in the end, Hashem poked Har Sinai because it was the most modest and humblest of them all. And the pasuk is saying about these mountains, Lo Taratz Dun, why are you prancing around, dancing around? But they reinterpret that to mean Tirtzu Din. Why are you taking issue with Sinai? Because all of you have some deficit against Sinai. Tivacha Gabnunim. Because it says about these majestic mountains that they're gabnunim, tivatam o gibein odak. Those are the mumim that are found by a kohen in Parshat Emor. And there it says o gibein odak. He has some issue with his eyebrows, or he has a cataract in his eye. But they're playing on the word gibein as being some sort of mum, and gabnunim just means plurality of mumim, according to this. And the idea being that amar Ravashi shmamina. From this you conclude haman deyoyer ba mumhu. Someone who's haughty is a flaw in of itself. I mean, that haughtiness is a classification of a blemish. That haughtiness is not just an overstatement of one's capabilities, but it's actually a deficit or indicative of a deficit or a blemish in the individual. And therefore, the other mountains weren't chosen to have the Torah be given on them because they boasted. And Har Sinai, which was the humble and the low one, was the one chosen to have the Torah given on it. Enosim oto kapandria. We said in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to make the shul into a shortcut. My kapandria. What is the word kapandria? It's probably from the Latin word, probably connected to compendium or something where you shorten or a concise manner. Amarava kapandria the kishma. It's like exactly what it means. My kishma. What does it mean? Like it says. Kamanda amar armekafna adre. Before I have to walk around all these houses, this row of houses, eobaha. I'll walk through the shul to avoid having to walk all the way around the row of houses that's here. Amarabau. There was already a public easement to walk through there before they built the shul. You can't come and build the shul and then remove the public easement or the ability of the public to cross through there. And therefore, that remains intact and they can pass through there. It's not problematic to pass through the shul. Someone who enters the shul with not the intent to use it as a shortcut. They have the right afterwards to exit from the door that's most convenient for them, because that wasn't their intent when they entered into the shul. Someone who goes into the shul in order to daven, then again, if it's a matter of convenience for you to leave from another doorway, then that's fine, because you didn't enter on the intent of using it as a shortcut. You entered there with the intent of using it to daven, and then after you finish daven, you go out. You can see here, there's an otalv to the grah. The Gro actually changes the gears from mutar lasoto kapandria to mitzvah lasoto kapandria. It's actually a mitzvah to exit a different way, and that's based on the proof text that we're about to bring, Shenemar, because it says in Yechezkel, in the future, by the Beit HaMikdash HaShlishi, when the people come to the Beit HaMikdash, it says, when the common folk come to see Hashem on the holidays, Habad Derech Shar Tzafon, Ishtachavot, those who entered from the northern side, you'd say, Derech Shar Negev. They will exit on the southern side and vice versa. Those that entered on the southern side would exit on the northern side. Meaning that there is some idea that when you enter to the Mikdash, you enter from one side and then exit from the less convenient side. Don't double back on your way. That might be figurative in nature, that when you do something, you don't walk back what you've done because that erases what you just did. Or it might be from the sense that if you enter from one side, then you go out the other side, because that shows Kavod HaMikdash by not going back the shorter way, but going the longer way, that you're actually tearing and going out of your way for the Mikdash itself. It also might have to do with just the natural flow of people entering and exiting, that there should be some seder to people entering and exiting the shul. And that's the way it's codified the halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, that a person enters to daven in shul should try to exit from an alternate exit from the shul, not the one that he entered from. Then the final thing it says in the Mishnah is, Alubo Asavim, if this destroyed Beit HaKnesset has overgrown by weeds, Lo Yitlosh Mipnei Agmat Nefesh, you shouldn't tear out the weeds, because it should cause people discomfort or disconcerting to people, so that they will either daven that it will be rebuilt, or they'll pay for it to be rebuilt. Batanya eno tole shumachil. You can't rip them out to feed your animals, avot tole shumeniach, but you can leave them there on the spot. Tanan nami matziten tole shumachil tanan. Our mission that says that it's problematic is only when you're feeding it your animal. That's inappropriate. That's taking away from the agmat nefesh. You just rip up the weeds and leave them there, that also cause that same agmat nefesh. Tarabanan, beta kvarot ein noagim bahen kalut rosh. When it comes to a cemetery, one cannot be frivolous, cannot act in a manner that's inappropriate for the surroundings of the cemetery. First thing you don't do is graze animals in the Beit HaKvarot. Even though it's grown over with grass or there's grass there, that's not the appropriate thing to do. You don't put a water channel through there, whether it's an irrigation channel or a water source channel, you don't run it through the Beit HaKvarot. Over here, it might be because it destroys the kvarot when the water overruns, or it loosens the earth, or it might be for problematic in terms of the hygiene of the water, which is that the water will be contaminated with the decomposition of the metim that are going through there. Vein melaktim ben asavim, and you can't go and collect weeds or collect grass in there. Vim lekeit, if you do collect them, sofan bim koman, you have to burn them on the spot, mipnei kvod ha-metim, because that is the honor of the metim. Where it says, ahai, that's honor of the Metim, and what part is it going on? Ilema Seifa, if you're talking about the last statement of the Braita, Kevin Shusofim Bim Koman, my Kavod Metimika, to burn them on the spot, what type of Kavod Metim is that? The reason you burn them on the spot is so nobody's suspicious of you taking them and then feeding them to your animals. So you burn them on the spot to show that you're not doing anything that is anything inappropriate. But it's certainly not kavod hamet el haresha. It's going back on the beginning of the Braita, which says, Einu agim ben kalut rosh. Why aren't you not knowing kalut rosh? That's kavod hamet, meaning that the people that are buried there, it's only appropriate that one conduct themselves in such a manner that is not problematic, including Einu ochlim v'shotim sham, you don't eat and drink there. In Korim Vishonim, you don't sit and learn there. In Machshavim Cheshmonot, you don't do business transactions there. And you don't graze animals there. And you don't put a water channel through there. And you don't make them into shortcuts. And you don't collect or pull out the weeds or pull out for feed in those places, because those are all a pegiah in Kvod HaMeit. Okay, now we move on to the next Mishnah. Rosh Chodesh Adar Shecholiot B'Shabbat. When Rosh Chodesh Adar falls out on Shabbat, here we're going to begin to speak about the Kriyat HaTorah. And because this is Masechet Megillah, it starts with the Arba Parshiot and Adar. And so therefore, on Rosh Chodesh Adar, where it falls out on Shabbat itself, Korim B'Parshat Shkalim. We read Parshat Shkalim, we'll see in the Gemara Machloket as to whether that's the Parsha that you read for the Torah reading or for the Haftorah reading. Chaliot B'Tocha Shabbat, if Rosh Chodesh Adar falls out during the week, Maktamim L'Shabbat. We move it up a week, we read Parshat Shkalim on the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh. Umafsikim the Shabbat acheret, and then we skip one Shabbat if that's the case. If it wasn't Rosh Chodesh and Shabbat, we skip one Shabbat, Bishniya, and then on the second Shabbat, we read Parshat Zachor. If Rosh Chodesh was on Shabbat, the second Shabbat will be Parshat Zachor. If it was during the week and we moved it earlier to the Shabbat before Rosh Chodesh, then you skip one Shabbat, and then the next Shabbat, you read Parshat Zachor. And the reason, as the Gemara is going to tell us, is to be masmich, the Mechiyat Amalek, to the story of the Megillah, which also involves Haman, who is a descendant of Amalek, trying to destroy us, and Hashem's interceding on our behalf. B'shlishit, on the third Shabbat, you read Parah Duma, Parshat Parah, u'b'rivit, Achodesh Hazeh Lachem. And on the fourth week, you read Parshat Achodesh. Now, Parshat Achodesh is relevant because it's speaking about Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so that makes sense to read it for Rosh Chodesh. Parah Duma, Rashi says over here, you read it beforehand because you want people to become tahor in order to be ready to bring their Korbanei HaPesach. And so that's the order. Although Rashi then quotes from the Yerushalmi and says that really it should have been the other order, because the order historically was the fact that they put the Mishkan together, and then on the second day of the Mishkan, they burnt the Parah Aduma and they started to be Metaher, everybody. And therefore, historically, it would have been the other way around. Nevertheless, Yerushalmi says that we move Parah Aduma up earlier, even though it's not historically in order, because Tarat Yisrael, because that talks about the Tara of Klal Yisrael, and that's something that we put an emphasis on, and something that almost, in a sense, are praying that we can have back again, and therefore we put it before Parshat HaChodesh. Although, interestingly enough, the Mishnah Berurah in Tavresh Pehe, Ot Aleph, by the Arba Parshiot, explains with regard to Parshat Parah, Hashlishiti Parshat Parah Duma, Bibi Shabbat Kodem Parshat HaChodesh, that comes before Parshat HaChodesh, Ken Hayis Srefataba Midbar Samuch LeNisan, because it was burnt up in the Midbar close to Nisan, Kedei Lazot Bait Yisrael Be'efer HaChatat, in order to be Metaher Yisrael, Miyad Achar HaKamat HaMishkan, right immediately after HaKamat HaMishkan, Kedei Shutorim Yuchul Lasot HaPesach Bizmano, which seemed to imply that it took place during the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim. And he speaks about the prayer for the future, that Hashem should sprinkle on us the Mayim Torim very soon with the Gula Tida. So the Mishnah Berurah actually says that historically Parah Duma was first, and therefore it's in the right order of reading Parshat Parah and then Parshat HaChodesh. The only issue with all of this is that there is somewhat of a chicken and egg situation with this issue, which is that the Parah Duma requires to be burnt on Har HaZeitim opposite the Kodesh HaKodeshim, or that means in the time of the Mishkan, it would require the Mishkan to be there in order to burn the Parah Aduma. So how could you have a Parah Duma that predated the Mishkan? And if you don't have it predate the Mishkan, how can you get anybody tahor in time to do it in the Mishkan? So there has to be some sort of balance here between doing the Parah Duma and also being mitahar the individual so that they could come and do the Avodah in the Mishkan as it was consecrated. And that might relate to the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim, where they did the Parah Duma maybe and mitahar them during the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim, so that by the eighth day they were completely tahor, they were for sure tahor. B'chamishit, on the fifth way, chozrim l'ksidran, you go back to the normal way. B'chol mafsikim, on all these days, you stop the normal Torah reading, and you read from the Inyan HaDiyoma, Roshei Chodoshim, Chanukah, Purim, Taniyot, Umamadot, Uviyom HaKippurim. All of these days override what would be the normal Torah reading. As the Baal Tosafot point out here, why is Yom HaKippurim mentioned and not the other Moadim? So Tosafot claims that all of these are speaking about Torah reading that involves three aliyot. Three aliyot, which means a normal Torah reading. So on a normal weekday Torah reading, it would be supplanted by Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, Purim, Tanit, which we read by Yechau, or by Mamadot, where we read from Breishit, they would supplant the normal Parshat HaShavua. And the same is true on Yom HaKippurim at Mincha time. If it falls out on Shabbat, where you normally have read from the Parshat HaShavua, Yom Kippur overrides that, and you read Parshat Arayot, which is not true by the other Moadim, don't have a Kriyat Torah during Mincha, and therefore you read from the Parshat HaShavua at Mincha on a regular Moed. And that's what Tosafot says is being referenced to here, but it is actually true of other Moadim as well, that they override the normal reading of Shabbat. Tanan Chatam. We have a Mishnah there, Bechad Badar Mashmim al Shkalim. This is the first Mishnah in Shkalim, that on the first of Adar, they used to start announcing that you have to bring the Shkalim to the Mikdash, Ba'ala Kilayim, and that one should start removing the Kilayim that has grown during the rainy season in the fields and has not been noticed yet. You should go and pull it out and remove it so it doesn't continue to grow. Bishlam ala kilayim dizman zriyahi. Okay, with regards to the kilayim, I understand, because this is the time of planting, not literally planting, but the time of the emergence of the planting that was there beforehand. Ela shkalim inolan. How do you know that this is the time for the shkalim? Amar Rabbi Tavi, Amar Rabbi Oshaya, Amar Kral, the Pasuk says, by the Korban of Rosh Chodesh, zot alot chodesh b'chodesho d'chodshei hashana. As Rashi says over there, the word Chodesh appears too many times over there. And therefore, Amra Torah, Chadesh, Vavei Kurban, Mitshuma Chadasha, that one should renew and bring from the new budget year of the Beit HaMikdash. Now, how do we know what that budget year is? The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us in Dav Zayin that there's a Gzeres Shavah, a Chodesh Hazelachem, that we read in Parshat Bo, that refers to Nisan, and the Chodesh, as mentioned here, that's also Nisan, to tell us that the fiscal or the budget year of the Mikdash starts in Nisan. Therefore, they have to collect the Chatzi Shekel, which is the funding for the Korbanot of the year from Klal Yisrael. They have to be brought in time to start on the first of Nisan. And came into Nisan Boi, Akruve, Mitruma Chadasha, since you have to start the new budget year in Nisan, Kadminan, Bikarinan, Bechad Badar. We start reading Parshat Shkalim on Rosh Chodesh Adar a month beforehand to give people time, Keichi Delay to Shkalim, the Mikdash. So people will pay in their Chatzi the Shekel in time so they can start the new budget year. Come on, who's this like? Deloka Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. This is not like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Di Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Amar Shtei Shabbatot. When it comes to how long in advance you need to start preparing for something, a significant event that's coming up, there's a machloka between the Chachamim Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Tanya. Sholim Yilchot HaPesach, Kodem Pesach Shloshim Yom. The Chachamim believe you start to investigate, to learn, to open up the issues that relate to a holiday of Pesach 30 days before Pesach. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Shtei Shabbatot. You do it 2 weeks before. So his raya is from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is standing on Rosh Chodesh Nisan telling the people about Korban HaPesach. That's 2 weeks in advance. And the Chachamim's proof is from the fact that in Parshat Balotcha, that on the Pesach Rishon, Moshe is telling the people about what's going to happen on Pesach Sheni, so that's 30 days in advance. So here you see that when you do it 30 days in advance, this seems to favor the position of the Chachamim. It says, Afilu Teimer Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Kevin Damarmar, B'chamishasar Bo Shulchanot Yoshvim B'medina. That the way that they structured it is that the money changers, up to the 15th of Adar, used to sit out in the cities in order to allow people to bring their machatzit shekel and collect it. Ubuchavei yoshvim b'migdash. And on the 25th, they come back to the migdash, mishom shulchanot, kadminan vekarinat. So because of the shulchanot, which start on the 15th of Adar, so for Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that's 2 weeks before that would be Rosh Chodesh Adar. So it's not 30 days in advance of the budget year, but it's 2 weeks in advance of when they're going to be found in the cities where people can bring their machatzita shekel to these individuals and they can collect it. Now they move on Chavei Yoshvim B'Mikdash. On the 25th, they move to the Mikdash, either because it's already come very close to the budget year and they need to start consolidating and bringing everything into the Mikdash. So it might just be a practical reason. Rashi says it's a significant threshold because at that point they start to collateralize people who haven't paid their machatzita shekel and force them to pay up. The Ritva suggests that it's because the majority of people already put their money in, and therefore they don't need to be out in the cities anymore. And there are those one that says, suggest that Chavei Adar is significant because that's the first day of creation, according to Rabbi Yoshua's view that the world was created in Nisan, and also could be the beginning of the Miluim. And so therefore it's a significant day where they make the transition to move the Shulchanot from the cities back into towards the Mikdash. And for the Chachamim, obviously, the 30 days is in advance of when the budget year begins, 30 days before we start announcing that they have to bring their Machatzita Shekel. It also relates to what we saw in the Agadah earlier in the Masechta, that Hashem foresaw that Haman was going to pay the Shkalim in order to annihilate Bnei Israel, and he was Makdim, the Shkalim of Bnei Israel, to be before the Shkalim of Haman, So not only was that true historically, but it was also true every year. We have the shkalim be brought before the incident of Purim. And therefore we read the parshia of shkalim in advance of Purim in order to offset the shkalim of Haman. Now the Gemara continues and says, my parshat shkalim. What exactly is parshat shkalim? Rabba mar tzavit b'nei tzavit mar talehem et kurbani lachmi, which is really the parshat ha-tamid, but what he's referencing to is the parshat ha-tamid, the parsha of Shabbat, Shnei Kvasim, and then the parsha of Rosh Chodesh. So he thinks that parshat shkalim is Rashi Chod Shechem, and Ushmel amar kitisa, what we read for parshat shkalim is parshat kitisa. Bishlam alamanda mar kitisa, anu dekarela parshat shkalim. That makes sense that you call it parshat shkalim, dichtib be shkalim. Because parshat kitisa is about bringing the machatzita shekel, and there it makes sense to call it parshat shkalim. Alamanda mar et kurbani lachmi, according to Rab, who says that it relates to the parshia of Rosh Chodesh, midei shkalim kitib be atom. Are shkalim even mentioned in the parshia? The Gemara says it. Time am I. Why do we read parshat shkalim or Rosh Chodesh? Ki Rabbi Tabi. Like we saw before about Rabbi Tabi, that because it has to do with the new fiscal year of the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore that limud comes out of the parshia of Rosh Chodesh. And since it comes out of the parshia of Rosh Chodesh, therefore it's relevant to the shkalim. So now the Gemara flips that reasoning on its head and says, Vishlam alamandu martzavet b'nei so mishum tikhtavi kovrano ta'atom ki Rabbi Tabi. It makes sense to read the Parsha of Rosh Chodesh because the whole reason for the Shkalim is for the new budget year to bring the Korbanot, and therefore reading about the Korbanot is a relevant topic. The Korbanot are mentioned there at all, so what does that have to do with the new budget year in the Mikdash? Because the Shkalim that were mentioned in Parshat Kitisa were utilized to make the sockets for the Krashim to sit on, and that we know because in Parshat Pekudei, when it tallies up all the silver that was given, it takes the 603,550 people of Bnei Israel, and each gave a half shekel. That amount adds up to the amount of the Kikar La'aden, enough to make all the Adanim of the Mishkan, and therefore there was no money left over to be used for the Korbanot. Where it says, Ketani Rabbi Yosef, Shlosh Trumotim, that the Parshat Kitisa, it mentions three times the word Truma. So it says, Kitisa Drosh Bnei Israel, and the next puzzle begins, Zaytnu Kolo Avera Pikudim, Machatzita Shekel, Veshekel HaKodesh, Esrim Gera Shekel, Machatzita Shekel, Truma LaHashem. Kolo Avera Ala Pikudim, Miben Esrim Shana V'mal Yitain, Truma HaShem, that's number two. Hashir Yelo Yerbe, Vadalo Yamit, Machatzita Shekel, Atate Truma HaShem, Nechaper Al-Nafshu Techem. So you see Truma HaShem mentioned three times, three psukim in a row. The first one mentions that it was Machatzita Shekel. Then the last one mentions Hashir Lo Yerbe, Vadalo Yamit. So that one seems to be limited also to Machatzita Shekel. The middle one just says, Kol Aver HaPikudim gives Yitain Trumat Hashem. And from that we are darshin that there's Shel Mizbeach La Mizbeach. One Machatzita Shekel collected to fund the Korbanot. V'Shel Adanim La Adanim. And the ones that were used for the Trumat HaMishkan were used for the Adanim for the sockets. V'Shel Bedek HaBayit. And there was a third one that was the Bedek HaBayit, an unlimited resource that was donated to the Mishkan. So that the first Pasuk that speaks about the Machatzita Shekel, that's Truma LaHashem, that's for speaking about the Adanim. The second Pasuk that has no limitations is speaking about the open donation to the Mishkan. And the third Pasuk is speaking about Hashir Lo Yerbev, Da Lo Yamit. Again, it's Machatzita Shekel, that's for the budget year to collect for the Korbanot of the upcoming year. And that's the limo that Rav Yosef brings, and that's why Parshat Shkalim is relevant to the budget year and to the Korbanot. The only little issue with that is that Rashi, in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, which starts on the second year and the second month, says that census which they took then was the truma that they collected. That's how they got the machatzita shekel for the payment of the korbanot. The only problem with that is that it starts on Rosh Chodesh Iyar and not on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And that means that they had a month in the Mishkan where it wasn't funded according to that view in Rashi. And therefore it's more likely that they had to collect that earlier time and maybe that they ended the census on the second year and the second month, but they had started earlier to collect because they need to start the budget year of the Mishkan. And in the Korbanot, we want everybody to have an equal hand, an equal participant. We don't want there to be any unevenness or inequality in the Korbanot at Tzibur, because they belong to everyone. And therefore, it has to be a Machatzita Shekel, not used from the leftover donations from the Mishkan. So, Bishlam Alamanda Amar Kitisa Ainu Deshani. Hai Rosh Chodesh Mishar Rosh Chodeshim. According to one who says that we read Kitisa on this Rosh Chodesh when it falls out on Shabbat, then this Rosh Chodesh is different than any other Rosh Chodesh. Because every other Rosh Chodesh you read, Rashi Chod Shechem, this Rosh Chodesh you read, Kitisa. Laman Damar Tzav et Korbani, Maishani. What's different between this Rosh Chodesh and any other Rosh Chodesh where you read the Parshia of Rosh Chodesh? Shani, the other Rosh Chodesh, Shredim, Kari Shita, Bin Yonah Diyoma. Because in other Rosh Chodeshim, if we follow that on a Shabbat, you read six Aliyot from the Parshat HaShavua. V'chad b'rosh chodesh. And then the final one, the seventh aliyah, would come from Rosh Chodesh. That's based on the view that the Shvi Ola L'maftir, the way that we do it today, where Shvi is not Ola L'maftir, we read seven from the Parshat HaShavua, and then the eighth one is the Maftir that comes from Rosh Chodesh. B'la idna kulu b'rosh chodesh. On the other hand, today you read all seven aliyot from the Parshat of Rosh Chodesh. Anicha l'man d'amar l'seder parshiotu chuzer. Right, that goes well according to what the Gemara we're going to see on the upcoming daf, that Arba Parshiot, according to the one who says that you change the whole Parshat HaShavua, that works well, because now you're reading Rosh Chodesh as the Parshat HaShavua, period, and all seven aliyot come from that. Mandamar l'seder haftorot u'chuzer, that the Arba Parshiot only change laftorah, maftir and laftorah, don't change the kriyat haTorah of the day, Parshat HaYoma Karinan, and therefore you read the regular Parshat HaShavua, Maishoni. What's the difference between this Rosh Chodesh, Adar, with Shkalim, and any other Rosh Chodesh? Shani, the Rosh Chodeshim, on a regular Rosh Chodesh, Kari Shita bin Yonah Diyoma, read six from the Parshat HaShavua, V'chad Kari b'Rosh Chodesh, and then the final one you read from Rosh Chodesh, the seventh Aliyah, or for us, the eighth Aliyah, comes from the Maftir for Rosh Chodesh, V'ilu Ha'idno, when it's Parshat Shkalim, Karu Tzlata bin Yonah Diyoma, you read three Aliyot from Parshat HaShavua, V'arbu Karu b'Rosh Chodesh, and then you read four Aliyot from the Parshat Shkalim, which is the Parshia of Rosh Chodesh. Meitve, is that really true? Rosh Chodesh Adar Shkaliot b'Shabbat, Korim per Parshat Shkalim u'maftirim b'Yoda Kohen. Then you read from Parshat Shkalim, and Haftorah comes from Yoda Kohen, which is about the collection of the funds to restore the Mikdash in the time of Yoash, Melech Yehuda. Bishl Malaman Damar Kitisa, Hainu de Maftirim b'Yoda Didomile. That has similarities, meaning that whatever you finish off with as the Maftir, the Haftorah should be topically relevant or connected to that. Dichtiv Kesef Nafshot Erko. It uses the same language that is used by the collection of the Machatzita Shekel, the Chaper Nafshot Echem, and that there's a collection of the monies for the Migdash, restoration of the Migdash. So do we have a collection by Kitisa from the Mishkan. So that makes sense topically to have that be the Haftorah. Lamanda Marit Korbani Lachmi Midomi. If you have the reading being Rosh Chodesh, why would you then have the Haftorah be from Yoyadayah Kohen about the collecting of the Shkalim? So the Gemara says, Domi kid Rabbi Tami. It's similar like Rabbi Tami, because the reason we're reading about Rosh Chodesh is because that's the source for the fact that there's a new budget year coming up in the Mikdash, and that's why we have to announce a month in advance to collect the Machatzita Shekel, and that's the same thing they were doing there in Yoyadah. They were collecting money to restore the Mikdash and do the Berek HaBayit. So Meitavei, Chaliot B'Parshas Mukhala, Ben Milafanea, Ben Milachorea. What happens if it turns out that Parshat Shkalim and Parshat HaShavua are the same Parsha, and they're back-to-back? Either Parshat Kitisa comes before Parshat Shkalim, or Parshat Shkalim comes before Parshat Kitisa. Korino Tava Koflimata. You read Parshat Shkalim that week, and then the next week you read Parshat Kitisa, or vice versa. You read Parshat Kitisa, and the next week you read Parshat Shkalim, which also comes from Kitisa. Bishal Amandamar Kitisa, Ainu Dimitrami, Bahu Zimna. Then you can fall out on the same time. You could have Parshat Kitisa falls out during the year at the same time that Parshat Shkalim could fall out. Alamandamar Tzabit Kormeni, which is from Parshat Pinchas, Mit Merami Ba'u Zimna. Does it ever fall out during the time of Parshat Shkalim? How could you ever have it be that Parshat Pinchas and Parshat Shkalim are a week apart? Mar says, in, yes, the Mnei Marova. That's for the people in Eretz Yisrael, the Maske Doraitim Tlat Shin, that they had a triannual cycle. They did not finish the Torah every year, but they finished the Torah every 3 years. In truth, if we look in the sources, they really finished the Torah every 3.5 years. And that means that they would finish 2 cycles of the Torah every 7 years. And that would then match up with the Hakel, that was the celebration of Simchat HaTorah, or the Siyum HaTorah, because they would finish the second 3.5 cycle right around Shemini Atzeret. And that was then the celebration, or maybe the source for Simchat Torah. And it also turned out that the first 3.5 year cycle would finish around Pesach, which would be in the time for the Vidoy Maiser, of the 4th year of the Maestro cycle. So it might actually turn out to be that was also something of significance that it fell out during that period. So you'd have 2 significant periods in the 4th year on Pesach, which is Vidui Maiser. You'd have 1 finishing of the cycle of the Torah. And then 3.5 years later, you'd have a 2nd finishing of the cycle of the Torah in the 8th year, the year after the Shemitah, when you do Hakel, and they would finish around Shemini Atzeret time. And that might be the source for Simchat Torah, not just the fact that there's a 2nd day of Yom Tov in Chutz La'aretz. Tanya Gavate de Shmuel, we have a braita that supports Shmuel's contention. Rosh Chodesh Adar Shkaliot B'Shabbat Korim Kitisa U'Maftirim B'Yoyada Kohen. Pretty straightforward, explicit, that that is like Shmuel. And that's the way we paskin halacha, even though generally Rav Shmuel B'Yisurim and Baruch Chaim, we paskin like Rav. Over here we paskin like Shmuel, and Parshat Shkalim is read from Parshat Kitisa. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka, Rosh Chodesh Adar Shkaliot B'Shabbat Motziin Shlosh Torot. If Rosh Chodesh Adar falls out on Shabbat, we take out three Sifrei Torah. According by hand, Echad Bin Yonel Shayom. The first one you read from Parshat HaShavua, Ve'echad Bishal Rosh Chodesh. The second Sefer Torah you read from Rosh Chodesh, Ve'echad, and the Mafti you read from Ki Tisa. So that's why you have three Sifrei Torah. V'amar Rav Yitzchak Nafko. The same is true by Rosh Chodesh Tevet, Shechaliot B'Shabbat. Mevin Shlosh Torot. Rosh Chodesh Tevet always falls out during Chanukah. Sometimes it also falls out on Shabbat. So Rosh Chodesh Tevet falls out on Shabbat, then you also bring out three Sifrei Torah. Korim Be'echad, Echad Bin Yonel Shayom. The first Torah you read from Parshat HaShavua, Echad B'Rosh Chodesh. Then the second Sefer Torah you read from Rosh Chodesh. And the third one, Echad B'Chanukah, and the third one you read from Chanukah, B'Tzricha. And I need both of these statements of Rav Yitzchak Nafka. Why can't I infer one from the other? Once I know that when you have these events that coincide, I take out Shlosh Sifrei Torah. If you told me one, I would know the other. Did Mar Baha. Because if you only told me the one about Rosh Chodesh Tevet, Baha Kamar Rav Yitzchak, by Rosh Chodesh Tevet, that's what he held. Of Bahach by Rosh Chodesh Adar, Karav Svirale, Damar Parshat Shkalimim et Karmin Lachmi. That the Parshat Shkalim is the same as the Maftir that you would read for Rosh Chodesh, there you only know two Sifrei Torah. Ubishtev Torot Sagi, and therefore they only need two Sifrei Torah. Kamash Malan, that he thinks like Shmuel, and Paskins like Shmuel, that there are three Sifrei Torah, even on Rosh Chodesh Adar that has Parshat Shkalim, like Shmuel. Vele Maha, so just tell us about Parshat Shkalim, below Bayach, and then we won't need to know about Rosh Chodesh Tevet. Mar says Enochanami, that's true. Chad Michlal Kaverta Itmar. He did not say the other one explicitly, but once we knew the halacha that he said by Rosh Chodesh Adar, then we applied it also to Rosh Chodesh Tevet. Not that Rav Yitzchak Nafka said it explicitly about Rosh Chodesh Tevet, but we inferred what he said about Rosh Chodesh Adar and Parshat Shkalim, that we break out three Sifrei Torah when it comes to Rosh Chodesh Tevet, when you have three different topics or relevant in Yanei Yoma, Parshat HaShavua, the Chanukah and Rosh Chodesh, we take out three. And Tosfos points out that the reason that you have to say it, even though it's an obvious extrapolation, is because maybe somebody who said it was found in the city of Rav. And in that city, they only took out two Torot on Rosh Chodesh Adar. So even though they heard the din, they were able to extrapolate the din to Rosh Chodesh Tevet, even though the din wasn't applicable to them there. And that's why he said it, even though it's an obvious extrapolation from that which you know about Rosh Chodesh Adar, if you know that statement of Rav Yitzchak Nafka. The other thing to note is that the Gemara in Yoma also discusses this issue on Daf Ayin, as to when are you allowed to take out different Sifrei Torah, because it could be perceived as being a pgam in the Sefer Torah that you have to replace and bring out a new Sefer Torah. So the Gemara there says if the topic changes, if it's a new topic and a new aliyah, then we don't suspect that the first Torah was nifgam, and therefore it's not a pgam to take out the new Sefer Torah. If you're reading from the same topic and then you change Sefer Torah, that would be an indication of a problem or maybe a possible problem with the first Sefer Torah, and that's why the Kohen Gadol in Yom HaKippurim takes out one Sefer Torah, reads from Parshat Achrimot, Parshat Emor, and then he rolls it up and says, Baal Peh, what's found in Parshat Pinchas, because if we were to bring out another Sefer Torah from Parshat Pinchas, which is the same topic, that would cast aspersions on the first Sefer Torah, or it would be an affront to the first Sefer Torah, and therefore he reads it Baal Peh to indicate that there's more than that's written in the Torah, but not to be pogame by that Sefer Torah. That's not true here in these cases where we take out three Sefer Torah, because each topic is delineated and separate, and therefore each Torah is reading that particular item, and it's not taking away, or it doesn't cast aspersions on any of the other Sifrei Torah. In terms of how we read it, the general principle is Tadir, Sheno Tadir, Tadir, Kodem. So Tadir over here is the Parshat HaShavua, because that's the reading for every Shabbat. We follow the normal cycle, therefore that goes first. After that comes Rosh Chodesh, which is 12 times during the year that you have Rosh Chodesh, versus Chanukah, which only comes out 8 times. Although that may not be as simple as we think, because the Gemara in Bamei Madlikim has a Havamina that may be the other way around, that you do Chanukah first, and then Rosh Chodesh as the Maftir. And that might be because when you have consecutive days together, like Chanukah, which are 8 consecutive days, versus Rosh Chodesh, which is dispersed over the year, maybe that's considered to be more Tadir than having it dispersed over the year. Tosafot Fulton, Bamei Madlikim brings another reason, which is that Persume Nisa. And therefore, since Persume Nisa is more important principle, we leave Chanukah to the end, because then if you read the Maftir from Chanukah, you also read the Torah from Chanukah, and therefore that'll be more Persume Nisa, and that's why we leave it till last. And even though Persume Nisa might have told you to go first with Chanukah before Rosh Chodesh, turns out the other way around, that we put Tadir, even though it's not a consecutive day, plus Persume Nisa gets enhanced by doing it last, and that gives us the order of Parshat HaShavua, then Rosh Chodesh, that we bring the first 6 aliyahs from Parshat HaShavua, the 7th aliyah from Rosh Chodesh, and the Maftir we read for whatever day of Chanukah that it is. Okay, we're going to stop here, 8 lines from the bottom of Chavtet Amud Bet.